Got a question for you. Would you rather read a Jane Austen book, or would you rather watch a Jane Austen movie, or would you rather watch a reading of a Jane Austen book movie? Well, that's the prospect I've got for you today. It's the Jane Austen Book Club, starring incredibly charming people like Jimmy Smits and Maria Bello and Mark Blucas, who I'm told is an actor. It's a film about people reading Jane Austen. I don't know what's more interesting, the people reading or the Jane Austen, because I like to do both. Well, I like to do Jane Austen books, as in reading. I don't like to. You get what I mean. It's the charming Jane Austen Book Club.
Welcome to A Gentleman Guide to Rom-Coms. I'm Kelly McCrillis. And as always with me is my co-host, Erin Graves.
Welcome, everybody. I hope you have enjoyed talking to my decrepit aunt.
Oh, this is so rude. So, please, forgive my nephew. My grand-nephew. He's not acting so grand right now.
Where are you from, aunt?
I'm from Derbyshire.
What? What part of Derbyshire?
Well, if you ever chose to visit, maybe you knew. Oh! Sorry, I've gotten the vapors.
Oh, no. Did you get British COVID from the 19th century?
It's more commonly known in my time as the black lung. Yes.
That's not true. You didn't get black lung then.
I got it from my father who worked in the mines.
Was his name?
It's a hereditary black lung.
His name is Derek Zoolander.
Pop.
Hi, guys.
Oh. Oh, my great aunt just transmogrified into my co-host, Kelly McCrillis.
Sorry, I've been drinking.
Oh, that's why. Maybe I've been drinking.
It brings out the old aunt in me.
Oh, God.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. How was your baby moon?
Oh, yeah. I went on a baby moon. It was great. Robin and I climbed half of the Storm King, which is this small mountain in the Cascade. No, the Olympics.
You went to the Olympics?
The Olympics. Yeah, I went to the Olympics. We got second. In the Olympics, like in all of them, we got second.
Good job.
Yeah, I were pretty proud, especially because I mean, Robin's pregnant. That's pretty good.
How far pregnant is she?
Robin is 6 months, 2 weeks far pregnant.
Give me.
Well, actually, when this comes
weeks.
Out, she'll be 6 months.
Seven.
I think
months.
She'll be 7 months pregnant.
Whoa! You're stumbling into the third trimester.
She's wicked tired, guys. Guys, she's wicked tired.
Does she feel like second trimester was pretty...
She feels pretty round.
Yeah.
What second trimester what?
Bulbous. she felt...
Hey, that's my wife.
She felt like she got her energy back and was hanging out, having a good time.
Oh, I mean,
having
yeah.
Having a good time.
You know, on this trip we were on, the first 2 days, she was like, yes, 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 I'm hiking mountain lady, yeah, I'm asleep outside, go to the beach, climb a mountain, woo! And then subsequently we stayed at a bed and breakfast, which we kept calling an Airbnb because that's kind of invaded our public consciousness now, mm-hmm. But we got it back. We started calling it a
nice.
Bed and breakfast
nice.
And felt good. But then she was like sleepy and she was like, I could go back to the bed and breakfast and
Man,
lie down now.
I got so much done when Sarah was pregnant because she's like, I'm going to go nap. I'm like, I'm going to go read a book and finish it this time.
Yeah. You know what? That's the thing about Robin and I. We spend a lot of time together and I'm trying to get her to nap more so I can have a moment to myself. But she just won't nap. So
love you,
I guess
Robin.
We'll hang out. I guess we'll hang out together and love each other or whatever.
You're going to have lots of together time in a few months. I promise you that.
Yeah, maybe she'll learn to nap then, though, and I can get like a moment alone with my baby.
I guarantee you she's going to nap a lot.
Cool.
This is advice that Rachel Green didn't follow in Friends, but you need to follow this. Sleep when your baby sleeps.
What was her deal?
She woke up the darn baby. Oh. She woke up Emma. What was her name?
Right,
Emma?
But she did learn to play I Like Big butts and I cannot lie.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that you guys had a good baby moon. If people are pregnant out there, go have a baby moon.
Go have a baby moon. We were really lucky. We got to go away for 4 whole days because we're a couple of freaking freelancers.
That's great.
Yeah, it was great.
I'm jelly. I'm glad you're back because I wanted to finally play a game with you. And this game.
We're weird.
Is called the Great Jane Austen Movie Adaptation Trivia Quiz.
Whoa. You're going to ask me how many versions of Pride and Prejudice there are?
No, but I should. Yeah. Okay.
I'm ready. Hold on. I'm breathing in so I can put a corset on.
Oh, no, she's back. Go away. You darn ant. I've got an ant problem. I need to call you exterminator.
I'll go sit down on my fainting couch. I'm unappreciated in this house.
Sense and Sensibility.
I know of it.
Directed by Ang Lee. Mm-hmm. Written by Emma Thompson.
95.
Starring Emma Thompson.
Kate Winslet. It was our fifth movie we did.
It'll be on the 4K box set that I'm going to buy in a few weeks.
Yes.
That's coming. The Sony box sets: Taxi Driver, Sense and Sensibility, Social Network.
What?
And Anatomy of a Murder. It's such a random set, but I'm like, I want to watch all those movies.
Actually, hey, if anybody out there finds any random sets, those are some of my favorite things. Like when they pair weird movies together. Yeah. Send us pics.
It's super random.
Yeah.
So that movie made a splash at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
It won one Oscar. It was nominated for 7 overall. I think you already know what the winning Oscar was.
Let me think for a second, because I know Ang Lee was tapped for Best Director that year. I imagine it was nominated for Best Score, Best Costume.
Wait, hold on. You're ramrodding over my actual trivia question.
I'm going to say
it won an Oscar for writing. Best Adapted Screenplay, not original.
Yeah, that's the one I was going
to
say.
My trivia question to you is, name all 7 nominations you have. Well, I already gave you one because it was writing.
Writing, directing. Costume, score.
Hold on, I have to double check myself.
Okay.
This is insane. You're wrong. Ang Lee was not nominated for Best Director.
And
I was like, did I write this down wrong? Where's Ang Lee? He's not nominated.
Whoa, because it's impeccably directed.
I know. Okay, keep going.
Okay, so I said writing, costumes, score.
Mm-hmm.
Best Actress.
Which one is nominated for lead?
Well, I think Emma Thompson's nominated for lead, and then Best Supporting Actress with Kate Winslet.
Bingo bongo.
I'm going to say Best Supporting Actor with Alan Rickman.
No, I'm sorry.
Damn it.
There's...
How many more do I have?
There's 2 you still need to get. I'll give you a clue. There's 1 big one you're missing.
Well, Best Picture.
There you go.
Okay. I was surprised that it nominated for Best Picture, because there's only 5 at that point in time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Best Sound Editing?
No, I'm sorry.
What was it?
Best Cinematography.
Oh, yeah. I don't... Sorry, camera guys.
I'm going to give you like 0.8 out of 1 on that. I pretty much got it.
Thanks.
You
appreciate it.
You didn't get all of it.
No, and I went off the rails pretty early.
But yeah, it was good. All right.
Not Ang Lee for directing.
I know.
Are you kidding me?
Come on.
I feel like if he's 1-1 down the road, half of that might be an IOU Oscar.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It's like a Scorsese situation all over again. Okay. 2005's
sure.
Pride and Prejudice.
Joe Wright.
One of your favorites. Mm-hmm. The question I was wanting to ask you is, how did I watch that movie? So I'm going to just put that in as a bonus question right now. How did Ryan first watch Pride and Prejudice?
Well, okay, I thought it might have been on my birthday when I was super drunk in bed with me.
We were definitely not in a bed together.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Was it downstairs on... No, we weren't in a bed together.
No, we were not. It's okay if we wanted to be, but we were not. We've never spent a bed together.
We've been in many beds together.
We've bed.
Just not with Pride and Prejudice.
No. Can I just tell you?
Yeah.
It was at your house, and you left.
Wait, mine and Peter's house?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you left.
Okay.
And you basically, like, gave me the DVD, and you're like, hey, I'm going to be gone for 2 hours. You should watch this. And I was like,
where was I going? Class?
I don't know. It was a Saturday, and you had something to do, and you're like, you've got 2 hours to kill at my place. You should just watch Pride and Prejudice. I'm like, okay.
I should give my past self a high five for being so wise.
And I was like, this Kelly's a great friend. This is wonderful.
And I had free reign of my kitchen that had carpet in it. Man, that place was weird.
Yeah. Okay. 2005's Pride and Prejudice.
Uh-huh.
There are, in the Bennett family, in the Bennett family cast,
yeah,
they are all British except for two actors. Who are the two actors who are not British in that family?
Jenna Malone.
Yes. The other one's, I thought, is an obvious one.
I think I'm going to say...
Bennett family. I didn't say the Bennett sisters.
I know. I think I'm going to say Mr. Bennett, Donald Sutherland.
Yes.
Okay.
Ding, ding, ding. He's Canadian.
Oh, okay. So like, I know that Donald Sutherland has been in a lot of movies, but I was like, okay, he's in MASH, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's... American.
You're cool. Like, yes. Second. Well, I mean, come on, Kiefer Sutherland, like, super duper not British. Like, he's Jack Bauer.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. Last question. I think you're winning, I guess.
I'm at 1.8, I think, yeah, out of two.
Persuasion.
Okay.
Is directed by Roger Michel.
Mm-hmm.
Name one other romantic comedy directed by Roger Michel.
Roger Michel.
The clue that I'll give to you, par avu, is that this rom-com he directed is in the rom-com gents pantheon. We've done an episode on it.
I believe it's, the two that are coming to mind are Audrey Hepburn goes on a Vespa, and
well, I'm going to stop you there. Persuasion was directed in 1995, so I want you to rethink that shot.
No, but what I was actually going to guess was While You Were Sleeping.
Okay, so it's between Roman Holiday,
yeah,
which was made 40 years before then, or While You Were Sleeping.
Correct.
I am going to just give you a soft no.
Oh, who was it?
It was...
Or what movie?
The movie was, and I'm so sorry, you're going to feel so stupid, Notting Hill.
Oh, shoot, you're right. Man, I do feel stupid. We've talked about Roger Michel a lot.
Yes.
Well, fans, this is Kelly signing off. Thank you for letting me be the host of this podcast for such a long time. I'll see you later.
But he does a really...
Back. I'll no, take his
no,
place.
No, get out of here. Shush. He did a really wonderful, tender job with Persuasion in his movie. And if you can imagine...
Persuasion. So he came out against Ang Lee.
Let me fact check myself. Was it 95 specifically? It was like very mid 90s. Yes. 95. Wow. What a year for Jane Austen adaptations.
What a year for Jane Austen.
Well. Well,
some say she's dead,
but some say, nope. Yep. They say she's dead.
No, they checked the coffin. Yep. She's dead.
This week we are doing the film Jane Austen Book Club.
Well, why don't you tell me a story about it?
Tell me a story, Turk.
Let me tell you a story about love, D'Artagnan.
I ask you about love, you probably quote me a sonnet.
I'm not much more than an interpreter, and not very good at telling stories.
That's the end.
What do you mean, that's the end? That's not. It's the beginning of something interesting.
Listen, that's the end of that saga.
The end.
The concept is six books, six people, no survivors.
It kind of feels like it. or how about this as the concept? Six stories that mirror Jane Austen's books as they read them. Will these six characters be Jane Austen characters? Probably.
Oh my God. That was a little George Takei, wasn't it? Oh my. Jane Austen.
Oh my.
Jane.
Oh my. No, I'm getting somewhere else.
Oh, Jane.
Oh, Bay. Jane Austen. Who are we?
I think we're Jeffrey Rush if he's really drunk.
Boys, let's take a walk. Let's say this is a ensemble cast. Let's talk about characters, okay?
Let's start.
Because I don't want to go through the entire plot before we talk about characters.
I think we can start the spider web with Amy Brenneman's character. This is not chronological, Sylvia. But we'll start with Amy Brenneman's character. She's married to Jimmy Smits.
Jimmy Smits!
Good morning, Usnavi.
Good morning, Usnavi.
Jimmy Smits, who decides that he is going to, like, well, we meet all of them at this dog funeral for...
and I like how he's like, this is dumb.
Yeah. I mean, everybody is like, this is dumb.
But he's courageous enough to say it.
But Miss Bello, who does she play in this movie?
Maria Bello is the blonde one. Maria Bello's character is Jocelyn.
Yeah, so Jocelyn's dog died, and right. Jocelyn is Sylvia's best friend. And after this, they decide to go to dinner. Or Jimmy Smits has this great plan where he's like, I'm going to take Sylvia to dinner.
Yeah.
And at dinner, I'm going to say, you know what? Maybe we do need to refresh our lives a little bit. I've been seeing someone for 6 months. I want to keep seeing her. End of discussion. We're breaking up.
Okay. Well, you're a tramp. I dislike you.
This movie... I want to say right up front that in the first 20 minutes or so, I was pretty worried about this movie.
Uh-huh. What happened after minute 20?
After minute 20, there was a ramp for me.
Uh-huh.
It got better.
Uh-huh.
And, at first I was like, man, you're like, I don't, guys, anybody, if you're breaking up with someone.
Don't do it Jimmy Smith style.
No, this is like, And they like kind of call this out in the movie where they're like, obviously he's never read a Jane Austen book, but that's for breaking up with her in general. But like, don't go to a public place to break up with your wife of 20 years.
Yeah, don't go to a public place to get a divorce.
Yeah, that is like, if you've been dating somebody for like 8 weeks and you're like, oh, by the way, I mean, if that works for you. But still, it's much better and much more tender to be like, hey, I care about you, but I can't be with you anymore in a private setting where someone doesn't have to be freaking embarrassed like that.
Yeah. Can I tell you a weird phenomenon?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've never dumped someone before. And I just realized, like, what a thing for me to have, like, avoided.
Like, my gosh, it's the worst. To be dumped sucks, but in a...
What's worse?
There is a sadness, but a nobility in being dumped because it's like
I'm going to be strong.
Well, you're going to be strong or you're going to be justified in your sadness and your anger.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're the dumper, you have all the power and none of the nobility.
And
it's not, I mean, it's not that you're like dumping somebody is a bad thing. Sometimes it's the most healthy thing for two people to have done.
I mean, that's why you're doing it. So you can be in a better place.
But it is so like you are causing someone pain on purpose for right. like a greater good perhaps. And it is the worst position to be in.
Yeah. I remember being your like Sherpa. Not your Sherpa, but you're like...
Through two breakups, actually.
Well, I didn't guide you through it, but I was your cheerleader. I'm like, you can do it. It's best in the long run, like a Band-Aid. Rip it off. Just get it done. Come home. We'll get drunk.
Yeah. I remember there was one that lasted days.
I think it was weeks.
You Sherpa'd me through.
Yeah, I was like... It was like every week, you're like, I'll do it. I will. Then you got there. But I'm really proud.
But not proud of Jimmy Smits.
Because did a terrible job. Worst breakup ever.
There was something about the dialogue in this scene where it was like, he was like, and by the way, it's this isn't like up for debate, but I'm not giving up on her.
Okay. Like the case closed.
At least you're direct. So anyway, that's Sylvia. And Sylvia is kind of like she lives in a house that I kept mistaking for Meryl Streep's house. It's complicated.
It's like low budget Meryl Streep house.
It is. I liked this house a lot.
You did?
Yeah.
Because it was lived in?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
she's devastated.
She's devastated, but she's just seemingly a nice person who works for the public library system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's rich because of it for some reason.
And I think she's also rich. Like her and Jimmy Smith's together are rich. Yeah. And she gets half
and
of
he Yeah, he gives her the house. So, yeah, okay. So it's Maria Bello's idea of like, hey, let's start a book club to cheer her up. What
was it her idea?
I think it was some. It was either her.
I thought it was Bernadette's idea.
Her or Bernadette was like, let's have a book club to cheer her up.
And Maria Bello, who, what's her character's name? Jocelyn.
Jocelyn.
So Jocelyn, she's the one whose dog died, and she's kind of like a forever independent, not fall in love kind of person.
Yeah.
And
always single.
Always single. Always. She's a dog. She's a dog mom.
Yeah.
Wait. So how come you can like disparagingly? I think this is turning around. But how come disparagingly people use the word like cat lady, but not like dog person?
As a cat person myself, I get it. Because you see someone with a dog, they're out on a walk, they're living life, they're like, they're come bonding. On, come on, let's okay. go out. And with the cats, it's like, no, no, get off. No, that's you as a cat person. So, okay. And I enjoy being a cat person, but yeah, it's not good.
Okay. So she's a dog person and she's independent forever. Then there's Bernadette, who's like, kind of like the older, sassy, been divorced six times, but love and life mm-hmm. lady.
Yeah.
She's and played by...
Kathy Baker.
Kathy Baker.
Sorry, Kathy. Never heard of you. But you're fine in this movie.
Yeah, I like her in this movie. And then we have Purdy.
Purdy, played by Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt, who this is what... Like, Emily Blunt is good at playing severe, but this is the first time I've ever seen her, like... But like non-intimidating,
she's kind of a pathetic character.
She's a little pathetic, a little buttoned up.
Yeah.
She's going through a like she's going like it's obvious that she as a character has a lot of past trauma that is giving her like she's very nervous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nervous, but domineering when it comes to like I know a lot of these people in the English department.
She's snooty.
Yeah, she's like, I know things, and my ability to know things is what gives me power in a situation.
But also still socially awkward about it.
Yeah, still socially awkward. And then there's...
Well, her situation is she's not getting along well with her husband who has to... He was going to take her to France on a business trip, but then the business trip got canceled, and she's really upset at him for it, and I don't know what he could have done about it.
Well, no, I mean, logistically, yeah, but he's also not very...
He doesn't really feel bad that this dream trip for her got canceled.
Yeah, because it's obvious that she's like super into this trip. And he's like, yeah, sorry, babe, what do you want me to do? And he like goes out the door. And this guy's played by Buffy alumni.
Oh, okay. Is that why there was Buffy quotes?
Yeah, Buffy alumni, Mark Blucas. And yeah, he plays Buffy's boyfriend slash like super soldier okay. for a while. And at one point in time in this movie, there is a Buffy reference. And I have issues with it
as
a big Buffy fan.
I figured it was weird. Yeah, and that's half of her problem is... She's not getting along well with her husband, but she's also really not communicating what the problem is with
her
husband.
Right. She's very closed off.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. The other half is where my full on disappointment in this movie came is she has a subplot where she has a flirtation with a high school student.
Uh-huh.
And it is cringy as hell.
I didn't feel as cringy about it as you did.
I found it very cringy and it tanked the movie for me. I thought the movie would have been fine without that, but with it, I'm just like, I can't get into this story, guys. I'm sorry. I don't find anything interesting here.
That's fine. I get why. It's a cringy subject.
Yeah.
Like we recently talked about Never Been Kissed, which deals with this all movie with our central character.
Yeah.
But as a person who is going through like a... basically a quarter life crisis, I would say is where Purdy's at.
She's teaching French. I don't know if she's supposed to be like mid-20s.
I feel like she's mid-20s.
Yeah.
Yeah. She kind of has this crush, but in a in a very similar way as like somebody like in Never Been Kissed, where she's kind of nerdy and she's reserved and she.
But instead of having a crush on an adult, well, I guess this kid's technically an adult. He's 18, but he's a senior in high school.
This is still a fireable offense.
And she's her teacher, and
she wouldn't go to jail. She'd just be fired.
She would be super fired.
Yeah,
she has the hots for this guy in school, this may I say again, a high school student she has the hots for.
Right. And I think so he also like kind of really, he encourages this and like the two of them get very, very close to consummation at times in the movies, but
literally
like, yeah, they get close, but like the furthest they actually go physically is a kiss.
Right. And so I'm like, I'm not putting the movie in a dumpster. I'm not saying like, cancel this movie. I'm just saying
So I found her character interesting, kind of not only because of other things going on with her, but also because of this, where she's in a very self-destructive place in her life,
right,
where she is getting no satisfaction multiple places, and so she's reaching out. And so, yeah, not a redeemable part of her character, but right. It does make her interesting,
certainly. And I'm not saying this plotline can't exist. It's just it felt jarring in the genre that they're doing it.
This movie was complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The other characters we have is Allegra, which is...
which is an allergy medicine, guys.
Allegra Cole in Hitch.
Yep.
Allegra Cole. It's Amy Brenneman's daughter, Sylvia's daughter.
Played by...
Maggie Grace. Lost.
Yes, yes.
She's great.
She dies at the end of the first season?
Spoilers!
I mean, Lost has been out forever, guys.
She was also the daughter that was taken in Taken when Liam Neeson goes after the daughter who was
totally
taken.
Yeah.
I like her as an actress. She makes some choices. She makes some acting choices. I'm like, that was a choice, but I still like her, like, persona-wise.
Sure. I feel like this movie is full of... This movie's full of strong choices.
Yeah, there's a lot of strong choices.
Yeah.
And her thing is that she's a lesbian in a 2007 film, and yeah, the movie really wants you to know that it's like, we've got a lesbian here. Hey, look, we got Dotson.
See, nobody cares. but like in 2007,
that
feels a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like looking at it through a 2021 lens, you're like,
good for you.
It's like, I mean, but that being said, like I feel like the way they handled it for 2007 was great, because like basically when we get introduced is like Jimmy Smits is making fun of people having like no sex. And like, she's like, look, I'm like, and no kids.
Yeah.
Like he brings up no kids. She's like, I'm gay. I might never have kids. And
I just have a good life. He's like, yeah. Just have a relationship with another human being.
Yeah. You're right. And yeah,
so that was a cool dad moment.
And so that's, and in addition, so we've not Jimmy Smits, but everybody else we've talked about is in the Jane Austen book club. And the one last person,
can I just finish Maggie Grace?
Yeah. Yeah.
Her other thing is that she's just kind of
a daredevil.
Yeah. She's an adventurer. Like,
and she never wants, she, for some reason, I don't necessarily know why, but for some reason, she doesn't want her parents to know that she is a daredevil.
Yeah. I don't think she wants them to worry, but...
I mean, I get it. I don't want my parents to worry. Like, I haven't told my parents every time I've been in the hospital.
Really?
Well, you know me. I've been in the hospital a lot.
I called your parents every time.
No!
No, I don't think I did. I should have.
That would be weird. Do you talk to my parents a lot without me?
Like, hey, Shannon, it's me again. No. Yes.
What about that Jerry Lewis guy, eh?
Remember? That was a fun night. Introduce our last book club member.
Our last book club member is Grig.
Grig.
Grig, which is not a real name, but that's fine. Neither is Allegra. Grig is a sci-fi nerd, tech support, maybe really rich dude.
Yeah.
Who meets...
Maria Bello.
I can't remember her name.
Her name is Maria Bello.
Her name is Jocelyn. He meets Jocelyn at, like, she's at a dog conference and he's at a conference in the same place. And he's into like sci-fi and is super nerdy and, can I say, very funny?
Yeah.
He's really funny.
Okay, good. Because.
Who's he played by?
Hugh Dancy.
Hugh Dancy, that's right.
So, Hugh Dancy, as he plays Grig in this movie.
Grig. Stupid name.
Is.
But that's kind of funny.
Kelly, stop.
Go ahead.
You don't want to make fun of this name because the comparison I'm going to make is...
Hold on. If your name's Greg, great name.
I know, but Kelly, this dude is you. This guy is you painted with 1,000 brush strokes. It's...
I wear less Under Armour than him.
You met Sarah literally almost in the same context as he meets this book club, where he shows up and he's in like his biking outfit.
Well,
and
I don't
like,
bike though.
I know, but he was like, oh, I was at this other coffee shop and I was doing this thing, but I had to come up and meet you guys. And I was really into this book and I was reading these other books and I'm glad I get to hang out with you guys. And you met Sarah, you were like on a run and you were wearing like Lycra spandex for some kind of run
I have
on.
A lot of poor people running clothes.
It was like, it was some kind of like cosmic mixture. Yeah,
what it was like some like really, really, really old long johns that were covered with my broken sports shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a sweatshirt. I was getting my coffee with Sarah at the coffee shop late one night, just doing my thing, just hitting on her. And then you show up, I was like, fucking shit, no, go away. And you're like, hey, I'm Kelly, I like to do this, and I'm really interested in these things. I'm like, you can't help but be the most interesting man in the room, get out of here.
Or the most bizarre. Can we say bizarre?
Well, we're all friends now, so it worked out.
But Greg is,
that's what happens with Greg. He meets Maria Bello and he's like, hey, sup. And she's like, no.
No. She pushes him away. But
that's like, he's so cute.
She's also checking him out the whole
time. Yeah, she's into it.
What she's doing is she's fishing for a fish for her best friend, who is Sylvia. Because Sylvia is basically just gone through a separation, soon to be divorce. And she basically picks up Grieg and brings him to the Jane Austen book club, where all of these people meet. Because at one point in time, like, Bernadette meets Purdy.
Prudy.
I've been saying it wrong.
We've all been saying it wrong. This movie stars a person named Prudy and Allegra.
So Prudy, it's funny that her name is, it's almost ironic that her name is Prudy.
Huh.
But anyway, so they all show up at this Starbucks where I feel like this movie was getting most of its product placement from this scene where he's like, Starbucks, where you can buy a bunch of coffee from a bunch of different.
I got this great mug. Yeah. It's only $16.99 on sale.
He's like, I'm really jittery, but I've got more coffee.
Where is this movie set? It's somewhere in California.
So it's Sacramento. But the whole time I thought it was Southern California, which makes sense because it was filmed in Van Nuys, North Hollywood.
Yeah.
Santa Monica.
They're like, well, this is a North California movie. It's like, okay.
No, it's not.
Trying to think, there wasn't cool coffee shops to go in Sacramento. I mean,
This is 2007. So this is like the rise of Starbucks. This is before there's a lot of independent coffee shops.
Only in Portland.
Well, actually,
they had Stumptown then.
They had Stumptown, but a lot of their really independent coffee shops came after 2007, 2008 financial crisis.
Yeah.
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 Same with the breweries.
So have fun at your Starbucks. It's going to get really good soon.
Anyway, so we're both coffee snobs. So the six of them meet and they're like, okay, each one of us are going to lead a discussion once a month on a particular Jane Austen novel.
Yeah. And everyone's assigned a novel and that's their thing.
So
they don't want to read it.
Which one of these have you read?
Okay. So I've read,
we have Northanger Abbey, Mansfield Park.
And I've read the other ones. So I've not read Northanger Abbey or Mansfield Park, but I've read all the others.
So I've not read Mansfield Park or Persuasion.
Persuasion. So you've read Northanger Abbey.
Yes.
Oh, you have. Have you? You think you're better than me? You think you're better?
Well, I wouldn't say it, but I would.
No, get out of here.
He's such a better nephew.
God.
Thank you. Anyway.
That's good because I think you can fill in some holes for me. I wish one of us had read Mansfield Park, but
fine.
No, Northanger Abbey is the one about they do plays within plays there.
That's Mansfield Park.
Oh, but Mansfield Park, she reads a novel in the novel, right? Fanny Price?
Yes.
Yeah. What's Northanger Abbey about?
Northanger Abbey is, she's a writer. That's more a novel within a novel. She's a young writer.
Right. I read the description of that. I'm like, I don't want to read this.
Well, okay. It's Jane Austen's first book, but it wasn't published until after all of the other ones.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of which, whenever Grieg is like, are all of these in alphabetical order? Because he does that thing that I hate to do, which is buy a book with 12 other books in it.
Yeah.
Because it's just annoying to carry around. But I like that he does it. Well, see, that's how I'm not like Grieg.
Well, but he... like he's diving in. Like when you get into something, you're happy to dive into it.
I'm happy to dive in. You're kind of the I'm a chronologist, and you're a completionist.
No, I think both you and I really relate to Grig in this movie. I feel like
Grig, please.
Grig, please. Like Grig is our raison d'etre of this podcast.
Yeah, kind of is. Where he's like, I'm a guy in a room full of women who likes these things, but also sci-fi. He is us.
Yeah, and he's like,
he has his ringtone is a bunch of droids.
Yeah, it's a bunch of R2-D2 droids.
Okay, he's kind of us.
And he's just like, I want to hear what all these ladies have to say on the matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's us, because all we do is talk.
Uh-huh. But we also enjoy other people's opinions, and we want to hear them. Write to us at romcomgents@gmail.com.
They were describing why they didn't want to invite men to the book club.
Sure.
And I was like, oh God, do we do that when we talk to our wives about stuff? And we do.
We do a little bit. You more than me, but that's fine.
We both pontificate. I pontificate more.
I think you domineer and I go on. if anything, you know, we're kind
sinful.
Of those people. Yeah.
So we are so sorry.
We're sorry for who we are, but also this podcast wouldn't exist without us.
But we feel really seen by a character like Grig, because I fell in love with literature because of Jane Austen. Because I remember when I was assigned Pride and Prejudice in my English novel class, I'm like, I was kind of like reading a lot of different novels. So I'm like, all right, bring on the chick-lit.
When were you in English novel? What year?
Not your year. Junior year. My junior year.
Whoa, it took you a while.
I didn't become an English major until my junior year.
Oh, okay. See, I took English novel my sophomore year.
Yeah, I was like full on theology minor.
Right.
I was done with my minor.
You were
doing
philosophy too, right?
Yeah. Didn't double minor. Gosh, that would have been so helpful in my career. Nope.
You're like Kathy.
So... when I was assigned Pride and Prejudice, I had been reading like Joyce and Dickens and Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Thick.
And like
Thick.
Yeah, but lots of different authors from different times. And this was like the first time it was British authors of the 1800s.
Right.
So it was focused.
Yep.
And so it's like, okay, bring on Jane Austen. I hear she's cracking good, but I thought she was good
that
in
was
the
an
way.
Irishism for an English author.
I thought me going into it was thinking, I'm trying to think of a good like correlation, but it was like, this book is not a difficult read because people still read it now. So it must not be that, it must be an easy book to read and get through the way that, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an older book that's still popular today because of that same reason.
Ooh.
What am I thinking of? Like, because it's not Little Women. Because Little Women is actually kind of a difficult book. Like, it's an easy read, but it's long. Like, it's a really long book.
It's longer than a lot of Jane Austen books. I'm trying to think of a book that is both still considered canon. Is easy to read. Not. I mean,
like,
I would
maybe
say
like a Robinson Crusoe or something.
I would say not all of Jane Austen is super. Like digestible though.
Yeah. Pride and Prejudice is probably the most,
Northanger Abbey is also very easy.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's juvenile in a way, but it's still entertaining.
Well, I mean, Pride and Prejudice is the most enjoyable novel and it's the easiest
probably
one to
Sense
like,
and Sensibility after that.
Right.
I haven't read Persuasion or Man
Emma
for Park,
is
so.
Really long.
Emma's really long, but it's also very easy to read.
Yeah.
So.
But That was my experience. I was like, it's going to be a whatever book. I'm sure I'll enjoy it, but I'm not going to love it. But the one I was reading was like, oh my God, not only is this like fun and I'm really enjoying these characters and it's like a good tonic
it's
the way
witty.
That The Hobbit feels good when you're reading it.
Which just, Tolkien got me into literature.
Yeah. And so, but also on top of that, I'm like, this is just sharply worded. Like this is just expertly written.
And Pride and Prejudice was your first one?
Yeah.
It's concise. Really concise.
It's just a near perfect book.
Which is funny that like they leave that one to the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
I
guess
they knew.
if you don't want your middle to slog, that's a good way to go.
But they knew it's like, what more can we say on Pride and Prejudice?
Yeah, I mean that one is kind of the quickest of their conversations.
And Darcy and Elizabeth Bennet have been like talked to death anyway. So
sure.
Let's just talk about these other characters.
I like that they talk about the other books a little more.
So maybe it's best if we just finish talking about the plot by talking about the books and what is going on with that, if that makes sense.
So the first book that we talk about is Emma.
Yes. Which is represented by the storyline of Maria Bello, who is trying to matchmake Grig and
Sylvia.
Sylvia. I feel like Grig is like New Zealand Grig.
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 Or maybe that's Irish.
Grig. Irish. Yeah, probably Irish. So, yeah. And like Emma, she's kind of like she's a little unsuccessful at her matchmaking.
Right.
Right. And so each one of these books plots kind of follow the through line of the plot of this movie.
Yeah.
And basically Bernadette is just there. Kathy Baker is just there to kind of comment on it the whole time.
To be a, whatever the lady is in Bridgerton, lady whistleblower or whatever her name is.
Have you seen Bridgerton?
That's just what the trailer is. That oh. Julie Andrews is just like, I'm going to throw some shade at things. I'm going to spill all this tea everywhere.
I haven't. you know who would be really mad about that?
Who?
Her character from Princess Diaries.
Please do not spill tea.
Do not spill tea.
Yes, do not spill tea.
And then the next book is...
Oh, can we just get into how
sure.
every story turns out?
Sure.
So Maria Bello tries to set up Grig with Jocelyn.
But she ends up with Grig in the end because Grig is really into her.
Yeah, and always has been into her.
Yeah.
And like there's this weird part of it where he gets confused and he's like, I think she wants me to take out the mother of Maggie Grace.
In order to impress her daughter so that I could go out with her daughter.
But then I found out that she's a lesbian so maybe not. But he never really clarifies that with Maria Bello, which I thought was also weird. He's like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah. I mean, it's very much like an Austen book where there's not a lot of clarifications. There's just like hints right. and allegations if we're in Paul Simon
There's reasons why there aren't clarification in Jane Austen stories is because you couldn't just call someone up and say, when you said this, did you mean that? It was
right.
like, I have to write a long letter explaining why I thought this hand gesture meant this.
And
am
so they're
I right?
They're trying to replicate it, but... Guys, it's 2007. It's really okay if you communicate.
Just ask.
Yeah.
There's a reason. So that's their storyline.
Right.
Then, okay. Oh, Maggie Grace is Sense and Sensibility, right? That would make sense.
Yes.
Because she's Marion.
Yes, that's right.
And she's super temperamental and super, I don't know, Kate Winslet about things.
Right. She, she's not only temperamental, but she has a lot of feelings. Her mom says she falls in love fast. And she's dating this writer at the first part of this movie who like helps her out when she breaks her wrist after skydiving.
Which I wasn't understanding. Like, did you just meet this passerby who's watching you fall on your ass? Or are you actually on a date? Because you kind of call her, hey, you. So
No, they weren't on a date. It was just like that circumstance where like you have a strong enough personality where you pull someone into your situation.
Yeah.
And so she starts dating this person until she finds out that she's stealing all of her stories.
Which was revealed in such a bad, poorly shot way. It was really poorly handled.
It was weird, for sure, because she like walks in on her and her like writing partner or teacher and like Corinne, that's her name. Her the person she's dating, and she's like hiding something in the flue of a rejection
of a recycle
letter.
Bin?
Can I say okay? So basically, okay,
so we need stupid. To talk about this.
So basically, Corinne is right. Has like we get these different stories from
Maggie Grace,
and Maggie Grace. Basically, the things that we know that Corinne knows about her is that she's fallen when she's jumped out of an airplane and broken her wrist. She, at one point in time, got into this really complicated situation with a special needs kid.
Who exposed himself to her one time and had a really weird encounter with him.
Yeah, and her dad. But it was a really complicated story.
And it was a story told to her completely unprompted. She's like, hey... I know you're in a bathtub right now, but I need to reveal some character because that's what Sid Field says I need to do.
But like, she reveals this really intense, very honest, very like opening up about herself story when it's like sexy time with candles.
Yeah, and it's apropos of nothing.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. But this movie in a nutshell is wow, this is fascinating, but also poorly timed.
Yeah.
And then the other story, what other story does she steal?
One other, but that was the main.
Oh, that her parents are getting divorced.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? So basically she walks in on this like writing meeting and Corinne has just gotten a rejection letter that she doesn't see. And Corinne stuffs it in like this flue of a fireplace. And then later that day, Maggie like comes out and like pieces it back together and sees that it's a rejection letter. People, this rejection letter is ridiculous. This is not how rejection letters are written. As someone who's gotten hundreds of rejection letters, I'm going to say, fuck you, writer of this movie.
It is so stupid.
And this writer has written things I like, so not fuck you all the way, but this doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense. And it's trying to make drama where it's like, no, it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't
that.
Work like... So basically this rejection letter is like this... like snide person reading like I didn't understand this about this story, and the reason why we didn't take this story is because of this. And the kicker is like, why would a like lesbian who has her life together jump out of an airplane?
That makes no sense.
And it's like
what,
like maybe this, the only way I could piece it together is maybe the story was about her like killing herself or something like that, but we don't have any context for that, so it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah,
I was Robin and I were aghast so much that we had to rewind the movie and re-listen to this. Yeah,
it's
letter.
It's like, what, this movie is unhinged. The movie, the main problem with this movie is that it feels like it cut out like 40 minutes.
It really does. And we'll get to that with Maggie later when she like follows Prudy into the bathroom.
Yeah, what happened there?
apparently there was a scene that was cut out there. But regardless, she breaks up with Corinne and then she ends up with her doctor later on. But very much like Marianne, she's like looking for romance.
Oh, I just got that. Her doctor. Because Alan Rickman comes and what does he say to everybody? He's like, how can I help? What can I do?
He's the one that like kind of...
He nurses her back to health. Yeah, oh, the doctor. Except we didn't get any of that context, did we?
I know, right? No, we didn't. So that's Maggie. She's basically Marianne, but in each of these, they like combat, like her and Prudy for a while are like butting heads the whole movie.
Yeah. Because they're both being bitchy to each other.
Well, yeah, but well, I like Prudy is a snob and, Maggie's
being openly, what's the word? Not combative, but openly like
rejective,
just not nice to Prudy at all.
Well, neither of them are being nice to each other.
Yeah, but because it's so pitched just too
it's
much.
It's too much because like Prudy is being like way too snobby.
Yeah.
And Maggie is being like she says lines like, oh, I guess I'm not going to do book club anymore. And she like leaves. And it's like, come on, you wouldn't say that in real life. Like you would maybe like walk to your mom and be like, I don't know about this girl over here.
Yeah.
Like it seemed very unrealistic.
The director in this film really wanted to have a lot of like good chemistry scenes where we see the old crew of people like be really friendly with each other. And they have like these scenes where they're like laughing and like, they seem to have like inside jokes with each other. But then there are scenes like this where they just make ridiculous, like overpitched things where it's really ham-fisted and heavy handed. It's like,
yeah. But anyway, what's our next book? Our next book is Pride and Prejudice.
So who was Pride and Prejudice?
Elizabeth Bennet in Pride and Prejudice. She was too proud.
Oh, I thought you hated Pride and Prejudice.
Or was she too prejudiced and Mr. Darcy is too proud? I can't remember.
Our next book was Northanger Abbey, and that was Grieg's book.
Yeah, so explain that one for me, Copernicus.
I don't know. Grieg just had like some insights into the fact that like Northanger Abbey is a little bit meta. It's
I like that he read the book that's in the book.
Right. Yeah. He reads that which I've never read. Yeah. And it's like this dark book and he kind of themes his night at his house, like all spooky, like the book that is within this book.
Yeah. I was studying this when I read the book about Regency stuff. And this is what people during Jane Austen's heyday read. They just read Gothic literature.
Right.
And mm-hmm. It was just like the middle class art. That's all they did.
Yeah.
Just read stuff.
They're
like
well, our lives are a little boring.
Yeah.
And that's like, I mean, that's just a book about like, I mean, like a lot of Jane Austen is like miscommunication and like one person being like, oh no, I wasn't really in love with this person. He just had a strong personality and took me on a ride. And the other two people were like, I thought you were in love with my brother, but I guess you're not. So I guess we're going to judge you. I mean, Northanger Abbey is entertaining if you like Jane Austen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I should check it out. Then you have, what's her name? Jimmy Smith's wife.
Sylvia.
Sylvia. She's Persuasion, because Persuasion is about second chances.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Well, that's the last book. We haven't talked about Pride and Prejudice yet, which is Prudy, right? Or is that Bernadette?
I thought Prudy was
Fanny
Price.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Bernadette is Pride and Prejudice. Is that true?
Sure.
Okay, great. Regardless, they don't really spend much time on that one.
No.
But well, Persuasion is about second chances, and Jimmy Smith.
Good morning, Usnavi.
Basically, they've divorced this whole time.
Yeah.
Like they got divorced, and he keeps like poking around and like trying to do yard work at the house and like trying to see what she's doing and what she's up to. And it's like obvious that his other relationship isn't going well,
right.
But we're supposed to be surprised when he does tell her. And then like it all kind of comes to a head in their deal when, their daughter Maggie gets hurt again.
Yeah, they talk and
fuck the scene with her climbing. She's like at a climbing wall and like she's like
so stupid.
Well, she's trying to help this kid, which is like legit and cool, but like her belayer partner is just like, I'll drop the rope.
Her belayer like vanished as if it was left behind and the rapture happened.
Exactly.
And he, like, disappeared.
And he's there and he's like trying to help out the other guy for no reason, and she like falls and he's not there, and then she gets a concussion, and then the doctor is like, you know what? I'm just going to keep her here for a couple of days just to like kind of...
I'm going to keep her here for a couple of gays.
Yeah,
That's my favorite Freudian slip. Just a couple of gays, which would be me. My name is Dr. Yep.
Dr. Yes, please. But yeah, so like she just stays at the hospital for a couple of days.
I'm sorry. You're at a ropes course. It's a climbing wall. The person has one job,
right,
to not drop you.
Right. And not only that, but like I have gotten, you know me, I've had 6 concussions. I had to go into protocol for a very long time.
Yeah.
It sucked. You don't get kept at the hospital unless you like really crack your skull open something really bad. Like I've had my head stapled together multiple times. I've had it stitched together. They don't say, oh, we're going to keep you here for a couple of days just to keep an eye on you. Unless like you have... but tons of money and they're like a super rich hospital or something. I don't know. It was so ridiculous.
Yeah. So Jimmy Smits is like, oh man, it's good to be back with my family again. And
yeah.
Not be
and he
a
puts
dick.
His hand on hers and she does that thing where she takes it away and it's like, okay.
So Bernadette talks to Jimmy Smits, cause he kind of invites himself to the final book club,
which is Persuasion.
Right.
Right.
And Bernadette's like, you know, he was like getting into Persuasion, and
yeah,
they actually did a really good job in this scene. It's so weird. There's so many good instincts in this movie, and half
the
time
it
works, and half the time it totally fails. But this scene is really good, where Jimmy Smits is like geeking out about Persuasion, and she and him, she being Bernadette, the older lady.
It's obvious that they have like a past, like a friend history.
Yeah, and they can really talk out the storyline, right, and they like really get into it.
They're both
good
actors.
I love being an English major. I loved these conversations.
Yeah.
But she tells him, she's like, never underestimate the power of a written letter.
Mm-hmm. And later on, he writes a letter and that like fixes things.
Right. And so in Persuasion, the letter that Kieran Hines writes, Captain Wentworth? I think it's Captain Wentworth. Don't at me, guys. I only read it once. There's a part in the movie where, oh my God, the plot of Persuasion is you have a young woman who fell in love with an older man who is in the Navy, and her family convinced her to break off this engagement with him and end it because it wasn't a good match. And they were like, don't marry this guy. And it's something she regretted for years and years and years. And because it's a Jane Austen plot, chance brings them back together.
Mm.
And she like is so like smitten with him again. And she is wanting to have a second chance with him. And they have this kind of like very polite reconnection. But there's a part in Persuasion, I'm going to ruin it a little bit, where he writes her a letter.
This is the one they talk about.
And the letter is him being like, I'm willing to give it another shot if you are. But in the movie, when he like leaves the letter and passes it to her, I got a boner from it. I was like, oh my God. He like looks at her with these like dark eyes and you're like, oh.
So it's funny because I think it's during this point in time when they're reading this book, Prudy does the same thing to Trey or Troy, whatever the high school kid is. Trey.
Yeah. So my one issue with the mirroring of this is that it was Jimmy Smits who broke up with her. And so it would have been more correct. So it's kind of an inversion where he broke up with her and he had to write the letter taking her back, but it doesn't feel as interesting.
Has to be that way though, because if Jimmy Smits is the one who broke it off, I mean, I get that they flipped it, but in this respect, like Jimmy Smits has to be the one that takes like not the first step maybe, but the most apologetic step.
Right. He has to eat crow. And in Persuasion, there's no crow eating. Like she's super apologetic, but he's the one being big enough to be like, you broke my heart once, but I'm willing to try again.
Right.
So that just leaves Prudy.
Well, so to be honest, I thought this was this was a very real moment in the movie where she like is pretending to go to the beach to like meet on this last Persuasion thing, but she's using that opportunity to cheat on him.
Yeah, with her husband.
With this guy who's no longer a high school student, but they're going to meet up before he leaves.
It barely makes it okay.
Yeah. It's a couple of months after he's graduated and he's going to leave on this big road trip and she's going to meet him at this like sleazy motel. And I really love that she like drives down the street, changes in the middle of the road, and there's like this little girl on rollerblades like looking at her disdainfully. But when she is about to go with this like over across the street, she sees like what would Jane Austen do instead of walk. And I like this like thing where like we finally get to be inside of her head.
Yeah.
And also a lot of stuff has happened to her in between now and then where like her mom died. Dealing with a lot. Like her mom came and like, we kind of get that her childhood was like probably pretty messed up.
Yeah.
Where her like mom got super high at her house and like took her car and like burned her carpet and like almost burned down the house.
Right.
And then her mom dies by like, you know, turning left and she's fighting with her boyfriend all the time.
Husband.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
And she sees this, what would Jane Austen do in the crosswalk and decides to go back to her husband and like become vulnerable with him. She's like, she's at a turning point where either she does what is most destructive for her relationship or does what is most constructive. And she chooses to be constructive by saying like, please read this book with me. And he's very like adamant against it, like because he's like, what are you testing me? And she's like, no, please just read with me. And then they end up reading all night and reconnecting over this thing that you would have thought neither of them would have connected over.
Yeah. So we're gonna take a break in a minute, but I just need to get this out of my system before I forget all the thoughts that I had on this plot. I could not stand her arc, her plot, her character. I love Emily Blunt. She's not doing bad acting in this movie, but I couldn't stand her character and her thing with Troy. Because the movie is kind of saying, oh, there's always the wrong guy, the bad boy for you. And I'm like, not wrong like that. Like, I understand all the wrong men in every Jane Austen story where it's like, it turns out this guy was a cad. It turns out this guy was a cad. It turns out this guy was a cad. And then the heroine has to like circumvent those cads and find the right guy.
I think this movie's not doing that though. I think this movie is saying that she's the cad and she needs to realize it within herself.
Is she the cad in a Jane Austen way?
Well, I mean, so think of like Willoughby, right?
Yes. Yeah. I never thought of her being Willoughby, but she's being Willoughby.
Well, yeah. And I think this movie, I don't think this movie is like lionizing her decisions. I think it's saying like, she is in a really bad place in her life and she's about to make a really bad decision, but she chooses the right one.
Does the movie know that she's Willoughby?
Yeah, very much so. Because like when at one point in time she's like, well, maybe Marianne should choose Willoughby, like, because that's like the more fun choice. Like, why wouldn't she choose Willoughby? Why would she be with Brandon? Saying
Willoughby was this high school kid. He's Willoughby because he's wrong for her. He's a bad boy because he's a bad choice.
I think it was kind of conflating the two, but in a way that I liked her arc. I think they could have done her story a little bit more gracefully. But I really liked her arc in going after this thing that she's being purposefully destructive.
Yeah.
Because she is kind of a character that hates her life and herself.
Yeah.
And then she course corrects only because of this book club.
Right. So the first time I watched Sense and Sensibility, Marianne was so grating on me. I was like, I don't understand any of the choices that you're doing, Marianne. Why are you doing these things? Why would you, like, okay, I guess Willoughby's hot, but like, this, you're being so flighty. I don't get it. Then I lived some life, got some life experience,
sure,
watched it again, read it again. Yep. I was like, I totally get this.
Right. Because
I totally understand
this. Because she's like basically this kid that she is searching for as well, that maybe a little Willoughby-ish is, he's into plays and literature. And he's always hanging out in the library and he's romantic and making out with this girl. And she's just like, I wish that was me. And she makes this comment to her husband at one point in time where he's like, high school's over, because she was like describing about this time she was really hurt in high school because of basically how smart she was.
Right.
And she's like, it's always high school. High school is never over.
Yeah, and which is a weird psychological place to be in.
It is. It is a really hard psychological place to be in. And the fact that she like teaches in a high school is making her character even more complicated.
Yeah. Which is fine, but just felt so out of place in this movie. It felt way too complicated and not very Jane Austen.
I think that this movie had a lot of movies within it. We've talked about this in a couple other films where there's like maybe a couple of these could have been their own film.
Yeah.
But I didn't hate her story like you did. Well, I
would have gone to that movie, that Emily Blunt movie, but I think tonally it would be a completely different story.
Sure.
The tone's just,
I rest on the other side of it where like, I didn't love all of it, but I really liked where it went, where like they were like, we are at a point where maybe we have stopped being open with each other and let's connect somehow.
Yeah. I love the ending.
Yeah.
I love trending, but I have to say, we'll take a break in a second, but Sarah was coming downstairs, was in the middle of the movie. I was on my headphones.
Oh my gosh. What is this segment called?
I don't know. Sarah's apropos of nothing, sure. But she came down and she wanted to get all snuggly. And it was the moment when when Emily Blunt's in the car with this high school student.
Sure.
And I'm like, do not touch me. I'm feeling really creeped out by this movie right now. Okay. Let's take a break.
Okay.
And then we come back for Trope Talk.
Okay. And welcome back to Trope Talk. It's like handmade soap talk, but with less farmers markets.
I love it.
All right. What trope are we talking about this week, Ryan?
We're talking about adaptation.
The Kaufman film?
I wish. We're talking about the art of adaptation and how to do it differently and not so differently and well and not so well.
Okay.
So I'd make the argument.
You're making the argument. Yeah, tell me your argument, man.
This movie is loosely an adaptation of six Jane Austen stories.
Sure. Where we have a bunch of vignettes going on based on our ensemble.
Ensemble.
And in each of those vignettes, we have one of Austen's stories, or at least maybe themes or aspects.
Yeah, there's versioning of these stories.
It's a burgeoning virgin.
A burgeoning virgin of a version of her.
I don't think there's any virgins in this. No, Tru is not a virgin. I wouldn't say.
Tru.
Tru.
So this movie felt like, I was watching this last night, I was trying to remember, we talked about another movie where it was kind of stealing from someone else's, from some famous author, and it was just like doing a version of that, but just wasn't as good. Like, do we have another Austen homage in our midst?
Well, we have direct translations of Austin, like, you know, 10 Things I Hate About You. But that is a strident, I would call that an adaptation harden and fast.
Was it a P.S. I Still Love You storyline where I found this out, figured this out?
We haven't watched P.S. I Still Love You.
No. Oh,
P.S. I Love You.
To All the Boys Loved Before, P.S. I Still Love You.
Okay,
person.
Well, in that film, there's a lot of reference because there's a lot of like 16 Candle reference. She's reading Jane Austen during that point in time. And there's like, they're more doing a Shakespeare thing where they're pretending to be one thing in order to accomplish a goal.
Yeah, so whatever it is, I can't think of it, but... The other Jane Austen adaptation in this... is Bridget Jones's Diary. All by
myself. Oh, yes. That's very true. That's a Pride and Prejudice adaptation.
Mark Darcy. I'm very eccentric.
What was your point, though?
Well, my point is, I feel like I had some quibbles with Bridget Jones, where it's like, you're doing the Pride and Prejudice thing, and you wouldn't have Bridget Jones unless Pride and Prejudice came first.
Sure.
And this is a little bit more creative take on that. Like, mm-hmm. Bridget Jones is kind of like a 10 Things I Hate About You situation where it's like a modernization.
But the Austen / Shakespeare adaptation aspects are not as clever in Bridget Jones.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, feel what you will about the movie, the direct adaptation is less useful with Austen or less universal than it is with Shakespeare.
Yeah, because 10 Things I Hate About You fixes Taming of the Shrew.
Right. Whereas I feel like Bridget Jones dilutes
it's just kind of
Pride
plays,
and Prejudice.
It plays in the hay of what Pride and Prejudice is, which
it's fine. And I like the movie a lot.
Yeah, it's a fun movie, but it is dinged for originality.
Sure. And this movie, I do like the concept of this a lot, where it's a bunch of people dealing with their own relational issues, reading Jane Austen. But I feel like they didn't go as hard and fast into what that means mm-hmm. for each of these characters because there was so much going on with all of these characters.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's hard about... Like, I would never try to adapt 6 movies at the same time.
That's a tall order. I mean, Canterbury Tales, that would be a good challenge.
No, but again, each one of those would be a vignette, right? That's like those Friday Night Fright movies that like do like 18 scary stories within one Halloween film.
Right.
Right.
The A to Z of horror.
And unfortunately, this one is set up much more like a Valentine's Day or a Love Actually, where it's like all of these different stories are going on at the same time. But what I liked more about this format, like strip the adaptation out of it, and this movie exists in a really fun zone. Like the format mm-hmm. of it's very interesting where it's like all these people are grouped together because of X, but they all have their individual lives going on.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a Waking Ned Divine where everybody in this town has their own thing, but they're all dealing with one event.
Yeah. So it's way more balanced than Valentine's Day, which has way too many characters and we can't keep up with any of them. But it still doesn't quite take off the way that A Love Actually does, where we get all of the characters mm-hmm. and we like understand where all of them are coming from, because I feel like every character in this movie is shortchanged.
So do you think it's because of the adaptation? Would you have gone further into the adaptation where each one of these stories, they didn't really talk about it and weren't so meta about it?
Well, here's the conundrum I had. This is what I figured out halfway through the movie. It was like, oh, so each character is just going to kind of recreate the storyline. So I know where
very thinly.
Yeah.
Though.
But like in broad strokes, I know what's going to happen. Like, it's just kind of like, okay, well, Maria Bello is Emma. So she's going to end up with Grig.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's just kind of like written on the wall, like a million miles away. I'm like, I can see them. They're together.
And Jimmy Smits and Sylvia are going to get back together, which I think might've been my most disappointing storyline, because I do like them getting back together, and I really like Jimmy Smits.
Good morning.
But the thing was, it was thinned out because of all the other stories, and so I don't think he earned his way back.
Right.
And so when they're like macking together and Maggie finds them, it's like,
cool.
Okay. I'm happy this happened, but I don't feel it.
Yeah. I read Roger Ebert's review. He had a really good time with this movie. I was shocked. I thought he was going to hate it. But his point was, okay, this movie goes into directions that you see coming a million miles away. Well, he doesn't put it in such terms. He's like, you know where things are going. Mm-hmm. In a Jane Austen story, you also know where things are going in the sense of, you know, all's well will end well. It's not going to have a complicated ending. It's going to get taken care of. It's going
to
get resolved.
And honestly, every person that you want to be together with somebody else in a Jane Austen story gets together with that person.
Yeah, but the fun isn't how.
No, the fun isn't how. And in this movie, the fun is more the characters,
mm-hmm.
because I like all of these characters a lot. I think they're all unique characters that have funny moments.
Yeah.
And it's not situational in the same way that Jane Austen is.
Yeah.
Where it's not like, okay, all these people are placed in these situations that are difficult. How are they going to get from A to Z? It's more like, I'm being charmed by this character because of how they reacted to this. They'll be with that character, but at least I'm being entertained now.
Yeah. I think for me, this movie doesn't take off. There's a lot of good moments, but a lot more bad moments.
A lot more? Is it equal, and that's what feels like it? There's more bad moments is because it feels so...
Right. The movie feels regrettable. I feel like it could have been a much better film, but there's a lot of...
Oh, you're sounding like me now.
Yeah. And for me, like Emily Blunt, her storyline, I couldn't get into. Sorry. but all there's a lot of other beats and scenes where it's like, I see what you're trying to get the scene to do, but it's not taking off. Like that's like when Maggie Grace chases Emily Blunt into the bathroom and nothing happens. Like,
right.
Why did we have this?
Why is this here? Because like there's a scene where... I really like the scene at the dinner table where, like, I think this is the Pride and Prejudice moment, right?
Yeah.
Where they all show up at this library benefit dinner and Emily Blunt is getting super drunk because, like, she's been fighting with her husband. Her mom has died 2 weeks ago and she's just having, like, a hard time. And she runs off after, like, really, really laying it all on the line.
Yeah.
And Maggie, Sylvia's daughter, runs after her. So, I mean, so does her husband. But like Maggie's like, don't worry, I got this. And she goes into the women's room with her. And just like we cut to Prudy and Bernadette like an hour later driving in the car. And it's like, well, what happened in the meantime?
Yeah, because that could have been your scene for like reconciliation between these characters who've
exactly.
been really bitchy towards each
there
other.
There was like a lack of resolution, or they just got to resolution without the work.
Yeah, and I think...
I feel like Jane Austen always does. Jane Austen always puts in the work to get two characters resolved.
Yeah.
Like, think of a Darcy and Elizabeth. That is the peak of two characters being attracted to each other, hating each other, and then coming back to each other.
Absolutely.
And it takes work.
Yeah. I think this movie's problem is that it doesn't have too many characters, but it tries to make them too complicated. And it's like, you do not have the time to, like... get into all of the complicated details on these characters. And really, you should just be focused on like some broad strokes that describes where they're coming from. Because I'm thinking about Love Actually. The reason why it works is because Colin Firth's character, not a complicated dude.
No.
His wife left him for his brother. He's sad. He writer. He fall in love with person who worked for him.
She leaves. He chases after her after learning.
That's
stuff.
It. Yeah. There's nothing else to it. But it's trying to make all these other characters in this movie really densely detailed, then I think that's a noble pursuit. I think that is interesting, and this is probably why a situation where the book that this movie is based on would be better because it
right,
could get
because
into
you
it.
Can really get into the characters.
But like we got these weird like half refracted visions of Trudy,
sure,
of Prudy. Where it's like she has this freak out at her husband because he's having a conversation with this woman at her mom's funeral. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you were flirting with her. And me as the viewer was like, no, he wasn't. Like, what are you talking about?
And me as a viewer, I was like, maybe this is a big problem in their relationship, but like, I need you to commit to it in this scene where like he admits to it or like he really pushes back and the scene ended up falling flat, and because they didn't get all the way to one place.
The thing it just comes down to, every scene doesn't work because, well, not sorry. The scenes that don't work because it's committing a simple sin where it's telling us and not showing us.
Sure. And this is not the fault of any of the actors because like Emily Blunt in that scene, even Mr. Blukas.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Actually incredible. Like that fight, I was like, you guys are putting in 110% right here. I like it.
But the screenplay did such a bad job because it's characters describing their problem and that should have been shown to us. So I'm going to stop beating it with a stick because I found a lot of this movie charming. I just can't recommend it because of the things that I found cringy.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to say I can definitely recommend it because I had a good time, though I don't think it's a well-made film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like as a whole. Totally. Like as a whole vision.
Yeah. Like,
and the director of this film is mainly a writer, and she's written a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
But as a whole, I think that actors well-directed, vision fell short.
The things that I really loved was everything about Grieg. I thought that
Grieg was so amazing, and I don't want to just be the guy who's like, I liked this guy in this group.
But this is why we, us as writers, do need to be mindful of when we're writing characters of like, do we have a good stroke of like representation? Do people coming to this movie have something to relate to? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we would have loved this movie if our problems are fixed.
Yeah.
But we don't need Grieg to enjoy this movie.
No, definitely not. No.
But we get to.
Yeah. And Grieg is both silly, earnest, and honest enough to be a great character.
Yeah. They nailed that. They nailed that part. I also really loved Maria Bello.
Me too. I think she was my second, if not first, favorite character.
She is super lovely, and all of the things that she does make sense.
She does the thing that my favorite actors do where she doesn't break eye contact in a way where it's like, you're not blinking a lot. You're saying multiple things with a look.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it. But hidden in this movie, I'm sure, somewhere, even though you didn't really love it, there must be a rom-com Oscar!
Wild.
Ooh, yes. Many witty comments.
Oh, it's so hard when it's a mediocre movie.
That's what he said.
Oh. It's so hard when it's mediocre. But me or the sex? Well,
not bad. How about I go first?
Yeah, you go.
I'm going to give it best fish out of water.
Oh, with Grieg?
With Grieg.
Yeah.
Because there's something to, our English department, I don't know about your years, but our English department was like, I think it was like 85% women.
Oh yeah.
And being that guy English major was, you know, it was refreshing to be the person in the room who knew less or was necessarily expected to know less. It was intimidating for sure, but it was something that like a lot of entertainment was had in our classes because of how few men were in there.
Yeah.
And Grieg is, I think, the most entertaining character in this movie because he is such a loner. Mm-hmm. And being an empathetic, kind, interesting, weirdo loner just raised his stock for me. And so I like Grieg a lot. Best fish out of water.
Mine is kind of esoteric, but I'm calling it...
Like you seize it?
Best name drops, because I was really...
What look am I giving you?
Really? Are you sure? Because Grieg's thing, it's a weird thing for him to like, this is his hill that he was dying on. He was like, hey, Maria Bello, have you read... And he says, Ursula K. Le Guin.
Yeah, he says Ursula.
Ursula? It's like, it's Ursula, weirdo. Maybe it is Ursula, and we're all saying it wrong. Perhaps. He's saying it right. But he's like adamant, like, hey, I am reading all of the Jane Austen novels. The least you can do is read one Ursula K. Le Guin novel.
And I like that they really go, can I say, all of these characters have depth. That's one of my favorite things about this film, is like, we get a huge story on Grieg about like why he likes sci-fi novels so much. And it has to do with like his dad and growing up with a bunch of women, but how he knows like all of these sci-fi novelists that are, that like had to pretend to be men.
Right.
In order to
that
fit in.
That is really fascinating.
And it kind of like mirrored him being like, oh, you know, I'm like this guy in this Jane Austen club, and like in a small way.
Yeah.
But it was really fascinating. And then he like is like, hey, since you're sharing Jane Austen with me, I'll share a female author in what my favorite genre is with you. And
he's like, I want to connect to you.
Yeah. It's a really good connection.
Yeah. And Ursula, he like name dropped Ursula Le Guin. I'm like, yeah, Oregon writer.
Yeah,
and he name drops the one book by her I've read. I'm like, I've read The Left Hand of Darkness.
Yeah.
I felt so proud of myself.
So I'm, I have the Earthsea books right now on my shelf waiting to be read, but I am reading the one that your sister-in-law, good friend of the pod, Lauren, who's been on the pod, gave to Robin about story writing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's her like nonfiction.
Yeah,
like this is how you write prose.
Very book. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really liked, I liked that whole scene where he's like, and then I started reading this author and reading this author. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you've been surrounded by women this whole time. And he's like, right. And
ding, ding, ding.
I thought that was pretty brilliant. And what I like about this movie is that its intent is to say this thing about what's great about books, and what's great about books like Jane Austen wrote, is that we can come to them 200 years later and connect as humans over them and find new things about these books, but also new things about us. And books can connect us, and books can create community. And stories can create like love and trust and vulnerability with each other. And I feel like this movie kind of got that, kind of earned that idea.
My
but
one
didn't
hope,
totally get it.
Yeah, my one hope for this movie though is that it did push more people to read Jane Austen.
Yeah,
because she deserves to be read. I mean, just like other great films that have done this are like Lord of the Rings. Like.
Mm-hmm.
There was already an extremely strong Tolkien contingent, but it was fading off, especially in sales towards like the late 90s. And with the reinvigoration of a well-told story, everybody started reading them again.
Yeah.
And even though this isn't the greatest told story and it's not a direct adaptation, I still feel like this probably brought Austen, it gave her new life into schools and people's lives.
I would just say, you're better off watching Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, for sure.
And Prejudice.
Don't watch this for adaptation.
But I will say that in spite of not totally loving this movie, there were people I loved.
Yes.
Are there any circumstances in which the two of you might be more than just good friends?
The truth of it is, I loved you from the first second I met you.
But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you. Not even close. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
You have bewitched me, body and soul. And I love, and love, and love you.
I know.
Who were they?
And they were... Yeah, my question is, who would you love?
So it was between Maria Bello and Greg. Greek, for sure. Like, actually, I like Sylvia a lot. I'm disappointed with her choice to bring back Jimmy Schmidt so quick.
Yep.
But I'm going to say, okay, here's the thing. I want to say Grieg, but he, his whole thing is like when everybody shows up to his house, he like attacks them with a bunch of Halloween gear.
Yes.
Which
I'm
is,
not saying you ever attacked me with Halloween gear, but
I've never done such a thing.
If you were to ever spring something on people as a surprise because it's fun and it's thoughtful, you would do some similar antics.
Sure.
Not as in your face.
No. I think in spirit, I like Sylvia. In sexuality, I like Maria Bello. And in fun and personality, I like Grieg.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to have to go with Grieg.
Okay. I'm going with Maria Bello.
Okay.
Because she's foine.
Oh my gosh, she's foine. Oh. And can I say something about this film that I appreciated?
Mm-hmm.
Its cast of characters seem like a lot of real humans.
Yeah.
Like Maggie is a super beautiful human. And so like she's got that going for her. But the diversity of like looks. Faces and looks in this movie. Like, it wasn't super diverse, like, let's say, racially, but
sure.
But for what it was a lot of, like, there were arm fat on people in this movie.
Yeah.
And I liked seeing that. I liked seeing people with, like, imperfect faces and non-symmetry. It felt like a lot of humans.
Because I can see myself falling in love with Maria Bello, because, like, that feels... sounds stupid if I say attainable, but it's, she just seems like a real woman that exists in the world that I live in.
Sure.
When I watch a movie like Valentine's Day, it's like, no, I don't see myself having any kind of success with Jessica Alba or Jessica Biel. It's never going to happen.
And, or Taylor Lautner.
And
or Taylor Swift.
What's great about Notting Hill is, like, well, I can definitely relate to being flopsy like Hugh Grant. And,
hello, flopsy.
And the movie makes the big case. It's like, well, ordinarily, you would never have a chance with Julia Roberts. But what if you did?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, good choice. I like your choice. I think you told me that we had a letter this week.
Letters.
Hey, Flo.
Huh?
Mail come. Got mail for you.
Oh, Pete, you've got mail.
You sent me a letter.
You've got mail.
Hey, Frog. Hey, shout out to Rachel Foskett for miming that.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much, Rachel. That was really funny. That really made my day. Because I do that. Do you ever do that with podcasts you listen to where, like, their drops or interstitials are just something?
Yeah, I'll like drum along to like commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Like, I'll know, like, boom.
Me too. Like the Greatest Gen guys. I like know all of theirs by heart.
Okay. I got on the Instagram a message from PredictFlix. You should follow them on Instagram.
They're, I already am.
Predict Flicks. They predict flicks. No, they do movie recommendations and reviews and stuff, and they're really cool. I got a message from them, and they said, continuing to binge y'all's episodes and had an epiphany. Really hoping you've included Grand Budapest Hotel and Moonrise Kingdom in the list. I would argue they count. Haha. Also, just to put this out there, I think you should patiently wait for the holiday season, and Die Hard could feasibly work.
Okay. Now, I like the spirit of this message a lot, because we on Rom-Com Gents are known for being a little dirty around the edges. We don't necessarily kick something off for not being a standard rom-com.
Uh-huh.
The two Anderson movies that they brought up were...
Grand Budapest, Moonrise. Now, we could do Moonrise. That is about a childhood romance, and that's the point of the movie.
If I'm going to say yes to either of those, it's probably going to be that one, because there is a romance in Grand Budapest, but it's one of, like, many stories.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the central story.
It's my favorite Wes Anderson. I want to, but right. I don't know if I can justify
it. Mine would be... Okay, would you qualify mine?
What's yours?
Royal Tenenbaums.
Same thing.
Yeah, I mean, because there's like a triangle in that movie. Well, like, there's two, because Royal and Donald Glover, Danny Glover, whose name I forgot, and...
Angelica Houston.
Yeah, who's also named the character's name.
But then you have Gwyneth Paltrow, Owen Wilson.
There's two
Wilson.
Love triangles in that film.
Yeah, and like the point of Royal Tenenbaums is Royal's trying to get
his...
It's
more about family.
Yeah, he's trying to get his family back, and that's just part of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's part of it.
Any questions?
And then Die Hard. Okay, here. I'll make a deal with PredictFlix. You want us to do Die Hard? You come on to our Patreon.
Ooh.
Be on our Patreon for like however long you want to be.
And tell us to do it.
And we will do it.
We will
do it. But a rom-com, it is not. A Christmas movie, I will say it is.
And
a rom-com, it is not.
We will do it if you request it as patron. Mm-hmm. Because you being our patron, we must respect
thine wishes.
We have
to do what you say.
That's the thing.
To a limit.
This is a good transition. On our Patreon, if you ask us to do it, we will do it. We will Ron Burgundy style, and if it's on the teleprompter, we will read it.
I'm not going to watch Solo or something.
No.
But
within good reason.
You have a lot of leverage.
You don't want to hear our take on Solo, so...
that was our take, basically.
So, yeah, transition-wise, while you were gone on your... Baby Moon.
Baby Moon.
The train man came by. We had some beers. We played some N64.
This is the nicest interaction we've had with the Trey Man.
I think his problem is basically with you.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What have I ever done with it? What have I ever done to the Trey Man? I think
he doesn't like your aunt. He doesn't like your aunt being around all the time.
Boo me.
Get out of here.
Boo.
So he was like, here, you should probably take a look at this. And it was your essay on our Patreon this week. It's our weekly essay. And your essay is on top five video game
couples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, couples. Like all romantic couples.
For the most part, yes. The other, I think the number one couple is like, it could be argued is not romantic.
But. I'm not going to tell any of them other than the ones that you said was the Mass Effect one, which I thought was great. And I had an apostrophe, Shmi style, the other day, where what's great about Mass Effect and all BioWare RPGs, because those games have multiple romance options for your main character.
Multiple endings as well in their storylines.
And the game kind of is like puts it to you. It's like, I don't know, like you will have a romantic subplot with whoever you interact with, like in this way.
Sure.
Kind of like life.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about the everything about how you encounter someone and it's like, well, I'm married now. And it's like, oh, you and I would have gotten along, but we're not going to because I'm married.
Sure.
But I think about this kind of cosmology of like, if I went down a different path and didn't marry that person, but I might have still ran into this person.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like there's, I don't believe in the one, but I do believe that you can make it work with lots of different people. And I just think about
it's the multi, like what do I look like in different multiverses?
Yeah. And I see these people. I'm like, oh, if I were with you, my lifestyle would be pretty different, but I can see that version of me existing.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I like about these RPGs. Like, what kind of version do I want to be today?
And it allows you to, like, in a very escapist way, like, probe that part of yourself.
Yeah.
Although there is the ism that you can never play an RPG two different ways. You're always going to play it the way that you initially played it.
Yeah, I was thinking of, like, if I wrote a sci-fi story, like, a character who could do that, where he's, like, he can just kind of jump into different multiverses and see what that life would have been like.
Mm-hmm.
And like this godly character would be like, now you must choose. Like, I let you see all these different relationships you could have had. And even exploring through all of them, you still pick the first one that you were with.
Sure. I mean, that's kind of like an about time crossed with an RPG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the sequel.
Mixed with the one.
Yes.
But less Kung Fu. Maybe Kung Fu?
Yes. Jet Li.
Jet Li chooses who he's going to be in love with.
Jet Li chooses the one.
There, it writes itself.
So you had a great essay. We have weekly essays on our Patreon. Mm-hmm. We have polls. Where are we at on our poll right now?
In our July poll, we have beginners in the lead over Shakespeare in Love at the moment. And so I think we have one more week before we choose our movie. And so if you would like either Beginners, The Other Woman, High Fidelity, or Shakespeare in Love to win our July movie poll, get on it. You can choose one of our episodes this month that goes on our actual feed.
That means you predict flicks.
Hey, predict this flick. And so get on there. We got In the Heights as our monthly bonus episode this month. I think we might be doing Hamilton this month.
Yeah.
We talked about doing that.
Yeah, the next one will be Hamilton. We do a bonus episode every month.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, if you join the Patreon, message us. We will do whatever you ask within reason.
And I think that's about it. That's patreon.com/
Stop with the backs.
/ rom-com.
There you go. Just go all in.
Come visit us. And I think...
Oh, one more announcement.
Oh, go ahead.
In 2 weeks, we're going to be doing book club.
Yes, with John Green.
It's not him personally.
He's going to come on the show in spirit.
But we're going to have our own little book club, and we're going to do The Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah, so read that. Catch up. If you haven't read it, start now. That'll probably come out in like 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now.
So we're saying in 2 weeks that'll be our episode.
Okay.
So start reading.
All right. Well, what are we doing next week?
I need a film between 1 and 177.
88 for the year of your birth.
Ooh, okay. We're doing Laggies. We are doing Laggies. The A24 Indie Laggies.
Nice. I know somebody in that movie.
Oh, good, because they shot it like here, didn't they?
Oh, did they? I didn't know that they did.
I think they shot in Washington. Oh, okay. So.
Yeah, one of my buddies who was actually in that Levi's commercial that I did.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was in that.
Speaking of 88, you guys, it's July. It's me and Kelly's
birthday week. Yeah.
I mean, well,
we usually do a birthday week, which is Ryan's birthday is on the 12th, mine's on the 17th. If you want to send us any presents,
send us a present.
Feel free.
But yeah,
our address is Portland.
Yeah, and it's just the best week ever because we get to celebrate each other and celebrate our friendship.
And it's great. And we're gonna go out. We're gonna have a little bit of a party. Please. You know, if you feel like buying us a birthday present, come join us over on Patreon. It would really, really help us out. Like, not only are we trying to build a community here, but also on there. And that would just make us feel super special.
And we have kids that we want to feed.
Yeah.
So, well, I love you the way that I love Ursula K. Le Guin novels.
I love you like I love Jane Austen novels. It's incomplete, but it will be one day.
And this is where we will say goodbye.
Ryan and Kelly must bid you adieu. Thank you for listening to our review. Rate and subscribe, we'll even take a bribe. See you next week on A Gentleman's Guide to Rom-Coms.
I like that we can speak each other's language even when we don't say anything out loud.